Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Big Ten Sports Illustrated writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
Not too bad. I'll tell you what, we survived week two, which, you know what, after such a great schedule, week one of college football, this one was a bit of a letdown, wasn't it?
Yeah, we didn't have too many premier matchups. I mean, we had a few, especially in the Big Ten. We had a few. We had Oklahoma, Michigan. We had Iowa, Iowa State. Turns out UNLV, UCLA turned out to be a pretty good matchup. But that was about it. It wasn't quite the same. Illinois, Duke also. So there were a couple mixed in there that were exciting, but not quite the same level as we had in week one.
No, there wasn't the three top 10 kind of games. Let's take a look first at the Big Ten schedule, and then we could go a little bit more national. But the big game, Big Ten and national, was Michigan at Oklahoma. You know, Oklahoma at Norman, they really looked at this. This was a huge game. This was a big game for kind of both programs. I think even more so Oklahoma. Coaching staff has been around a little bit longer. They had more to prove than Michigan.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Oklahoma's coming off of a, 7-6 or 6-7 season a year ago. And yeah, they had a lot more to prove. This was also going to be Bryce Underwood's. It was his first road test against a quality opponent. We thought he played well in that opener against New Mexico. But I think when you watched Michigan play that game, you still had some questions. And boy, he did not play well on Saturday in Norman. 9 of 24, 142 yards, just a 40.1 QB rating. Just not an overall good performance. And we said coming into this season that Bryce Underwood is probably going to, or Michigan's going to go how Bryce Underwood goes. And he struggled on Saturday, and Michigan lost. Now, the question I have, Jim, is we're still only 2 weeks into this season. Is Oklahoma really good? And you're going to look back at this and say, "Eh, Michigan had a, you know, it wasn't that bad of a loss to Oklahoma." Or is Oklahoma going to be a 7-5 SEC team? And you're kind of, geez, you know, when's Michigan going to get it together? That's kind of the question I have right now.
Well, only time will tell on that one. How's that for being profound? But you know, the thing with Michigan, and I don't know, to me, this has been my year of the quarterback in college football. I think the quarterback is, there are so many new quarterbacks, so many of these young quarterbacks, transfer quarterbacks. I think within the top 10 teams, there's only a small handful that has a returning starter. It's so, like, whether it's Ohio State with Julian Sain, we saw it the first week, Arch Manning versus Julian Sain. These are quarterbacks who, if Ohio State were to play Texas again, which could happen in the playoffs, those are going to be two very different quarterbacks at the end of the year than at the start. So if I'm a Michigan fan, hey, I want Bryce Underwood to come out of the chute playing really well, but that's expecting a little too much, I think, from a true freshman.
No, I think so, too. We talked about it last week with Arch Manning. Like, it wasn't Arch Manning's fault that everybody was talking about him being the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning, or that he's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner, the next big thing in college football. And the same thing is applicable here for Bryce Underwood. But at the same time, when you're in that situation, there's so much dependent on the quarterback that if you don't play well, you're going to put your team in jeopardy. And this was a Michigan team that could not move the football at all. They finished with less than 300 yards in that game. And they ran the ball relatively well. They had 4.5 yards per carry. But it just it got out of hand. But it was one of those games where the scoreboard made it appear close, but Oklahoma looked like it just kind of dominated from start to finish. And hats off to John Mateer. That was a quarterback that a lot of people coming into the season were really high on. And I was like, okay, I may, maybe, I don't know. I'm really hesitant with how quarterbacks, but 270 yards, touchdown, one interception. I mean, he played pretty well in that game.
I think the difference, he had better support around him, but this was still an example of a veteran quarterback versus the rookie quarterback, Dustin.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And all that experience makes all the difference in the world, especially this early in the season. Maybe 8 or 9 games down the road, Bryce Underwood will look like a seasoned veteran when he gets some more games under his belt. But it's hard to go into those environments and win, as Texas learned last week, as Michigan learned this week.
Yes, that's the other point. They were on the road. But just to support my argument, though, about veteran quarterbacks, even when you bring them in the transfer portal, that could be all the difference in the world, Dustin. All you got to do is look at Iowa with their veteran Mark Gronowski, who came up with a 13 for 24 for a grand total of 83 yards. He hasn't thrown for 100 yards yet in the two games he's played. My goodness, do we damn the quarterback or do we damn the offense? Iowa is just so bad on offense. They lost to Iowa State 16-13. And I forgot to check this, Dustin. Whatever the over-under was, you needed to bet the under.
Yeah, I think you could say that about just about every Iowa game for the past 4 or 5 years. And you would be walking home a very rich man. it's a good question that you raise. I have a hard time blaming the quarterback because this happens all the bleeping time at Iowa. So clearly they don't have somebody who can develop him. They have not hired a person who can develop the quarterback. They had Cade McNamara. They had, I can't remember his first name, Dalton Hill. That's not right, but whatever. And now they've got Mark Gronowski. They've Spencer Petras. They've had a lot of different Deacon Hill. Thank you, brain. But they've had a lot of different options, and you would think there's just be one guy who could potentially move the football, and they can't do it. And I saw a question posed, like, is Iowa becoming an embarrassing program? And I can't go that far because they still managed to get 7 or 8 wins. But in this era of college football, you can't figure out your quarterback and wide receivers. It's just wild to me. And I did some math immediately after that game ended, Jim. And now I didn't know Ohio State's passing total was this low, but they played Texas, so I'll at least. So Iowa through 2 games had thrown for 127 yards total. The worst Big Ten passing team was actually Ohio State in week 1, which had 126 passing yards. So in 2 weeks, they barely outgained the worst passing team in the Big Ten, and they only did it by 1 yard. I feel like Joe Pesci in Home Alone, where I want to say a lot of words, but just jibber jabber's coming out because it's frustrating to watch them play football.
Well, what's interesting to me, Dustin, is you went through the exercise of finding a statistic to express the futility of Iowa's offense. Now, here's one that I found, and I didn't go looking elsewhere to see how bad this is, okay? But in this game, Iowa had more yards punting than they did offensive yards.
Well, sure. That's Kirk. That's the Kirk Ferentz special right there.
You can't make it up. But the interesting thing, as you said, Iowa will still end up winning 7 or 8 games this year.
Yeah. And here's the thing, though, Jim. When you look through their schedule, I don't know. They have been, I don't want to say, they've been, they have benefited from having 3 rivalry games, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. And they're typically, like, those teams aren't great, have not been offensive juggernauts either. So they could kind of play their style against those teams and still come out with wins. And they typically play 2 cupcake games. So there's 5 games that they're locked in to win anyway. And there's enough bad teams in the Big Ten that if they're on the schedule, they can get to 7 or 8 wins. Look, they have to play Indiana, who looked a lot better against Kennesaw State this week. They have to play Penn State, which looked a lot better. Minnesota, I know it was Northwestern State, but they just put up 66 points in that game. Oregon at USC and at Nebraska, who just put up, was it 66 that they, or 68 that they scored? I think I got them in Minnesota mixed up. But point being is they're going to have to play teams that have shown that they have really skilled offensive talent. And even in that Albany game, Albany's not a good FCS team. They only scored 34 points. I think Iowa may be – I think they're still going to get to bowl eligibility, but I think this is a year when you just kind of look at them and go, yikes, what – like how much longer are they going to tolerate this?
That bubble might finally burst with them. Let's go – I'll tell you what, maybe the best win for the Big Ten, Illinois 45 at Duke 19, and Luke Altmyer had another nice game. I've been saying, you know, it was easy to look at Illinois coming off a good year last year, returning quarterback, which has been my thing, you know, that veteran quarterback. But I keep saying that I feel like every time you count on a team, that's when they'll let you down. Might Illinois be for real, Dustin?
I think they could be. This is going to sound so stupid, and I'm aware of this. The one concern that I have in that game is that Duke was actually able to move the football pretty well, and then they just turned it over. And credit to Illinois, obviously. Like, they created those turnovers, they took advantage, and they ended up blowing Duke out. But my one concern is if they get into a game like that and they can't force turnovers, what's it going to look like? And they, again, we've talked about their schedule is not, it's not crazy difficult, but they've got enough good teams on there. Again, they'll play USC, they have Indiana, they'll play Ohio State and Washington. There's some quality competition on that schedule to where it's hard to say that you're not thoroughly impressed with their defense because they forced 5 turnovers, but they also gave up around 450 yards of offense, I think. So that's my one concern, but this is an Illinois team that I think has all the pieces. We've seen Luke Altmyer can throw the football around. They've got experience. It could also just be, hey, it's week 2. We had to go on the road in Duke. And you know what? We're going to take an early season win, however we can get it. And they get one more game against a MAC opponent before they really dive into that Big Ten schedule with Illinois, USC, and Ohio State taking up 3 of the next 4 games.
Real quick, is that USC game at Illinois or at USC?
It's at Illinois.
I think that's very helpful. All right, Dustin, that is it for quarter number 1. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP, elevate your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at keystonesportsnetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, we're talking all Big Ten football going on. We went over several of the games in quarter number 1, a few more to talk about. Let's go to the top of the Big Ten. Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. Boy, I should have done the math ahead of time. Those three teams, their opponents scored a total of 3 points. Meanwhile, they outscored their 3 opponents 165-3.
That's a pretty good weekend there, Jim.
Well, Oregon at least played Oklahoma State. I'll grudgingly call them a Power Four team. Just in general with those – here's the takeaways real quick. Oregon played a Power Four team. Oklahoma State is a bad team. They're a bad Big 12 team. We saw it last year. I thought, hey, they might have a pulse. Apparently they don't. Dante Moore, their first-year starter, 16 of 21, 266 yards, three touchdowns. You mentioned first week Ohio State's passing game against Texas. This week, Julian Sand, listen to these numbers, 18 for 19, 306 yards, four touchdowns. And because that one pass he did not complete to one of his guys, he completed it to one of their guys. So 19 passes, not one of them hit the ground. Pretty impressive. The least impressive win, Penn State only won 34-0.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit on first. I don't really have any comments on Ohio State. I think we all knew that was going to happen. The Oregon-Oklahoma State, I'm thinking about making a change at head coach if I'm Oklahoma State here, because Mike Gundy, it just seems to spiral. But here's the thing that I loved. Before the game, Oklahoma State talked about the budget that Oregon has compared to what Oklahoma State has. So already building in an excuse to get their ass kicked, basically. But Dan Lanning fires back and says, I'd like to know the difference, basically, between the budget that Oklahoma State had and UT Martin had. Probably some discrepancy there, right? Like, so, yeah, don't make that excuse. Whatever. It wasn't like it was 34-20 and you put up a good fight and they just had better players. You just got stomped. I will tell you, Jim, now I'm going to admit, because about this time I was in the press box at Ross Aid Stadium getting ready for the Purdue game. So I was trying to keep an eye on the Penn State game. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it was 10-0 in the third quarter at one point.
Yes.
Okay. So it was, to me, it was like that typical, what is Penn State doing? They have one of these games every year where it's just like uninspired. It's not a big time opponent. They have to wait a couple weeks till they get a, you know, Big Ten game or a Power Four opponent or something. And you just look at the game and you're like, well, Penn State's going to win, but boy, what are they doing? So I'm going to have to ask you, because I wasn't able to really watch much of that game. What did happen in that game?
It was the worst 34-0 win you've ever seen in your life. And especially early on, this is the contractually obligated to give the opponent some credit. FIU, you know, played better. And I'm one to talk because I do follow spreads and participate, put a couple dollars on a game here and there. When you start by making the spread 40-some points, you create this level of expectation. What I'll also say is Penn State, what I think hurts them is they have all these weapons, but it feels like they try to play a deliberate game. Almost, you know, like in Illinois, not quite like Iowa, but it limits the number of possessions. Their opponents, like we saw that even in week one from Nevada, they ran the play clock down every play. They wanted to reduce the number of possessions, and they did. And Penn State will often play that way. That's why I think it was last year's game against Illinois. Penn State was the much better team, but you didn't know it by the scoreboard because of that. You know, they'd have a really successful drive, but it took 12 minutes. You know, it takes the entire quarter. What it creates is a smaller margin for error. You make one mistake on third down, that ends your possession, and you're only getting a handful of possessions. I think the most telling statistic in this game was 3-for-12. That was Penn State's conversion rate on third down, 3-for-12. So you have a possession, you run the ball on first down, run the ball on second down, now you have 3rd and 3. And you throw a bad pass for an incompletion, you lost the entire possession. Drew Aller was not close to being sharp. not even close. And but I also get the idea, James Franklin, who has this, you know, the 1-0 this week mantra. He knows he's going to win this game. Everything is about getting ready for Oregon. It's playing some of the younger players, some of the Penn State fans. They're on the ledge. Get back off the ledge.
Well, to that point, I remember it was probably almost exactly a year ago. It was probably September 7th or 5th or however the calendar works. I don't know. When Penn State played Bowling Green, and I remember I did watch the entirety of that game and was like, Penn State can't tackle. What is like this? And that was a game that came down to the wall. I don't remember if it came down to the wire, but it was a one touchdown. It ended up being a one touchdown game. And I feel like Bowling Green had the ball late with a chance to maybe tie. Regardless, you watch that game and you're going, this is a team that's supposed to compete in the Big Ten. This is a team that's supposed to be a college football playoff caliber team. Boy, they got a lot of issues to fix, which they did. And I think you could probably say the same thing about this game. But don't hit the panic button, because we see this again. Penn State does this every year, it seems like. Last year it was Bowling Green. I'm sure there's been other instances that you could probably point to better than I could. Yeah, don't hit the panic button. Last year they almost lost to Bowling Green. They looked terrible defensively, couldn't wrap guys up or bring them to the ground, end up going to the Big Ten championship game, end up getting to the Final Four of the college football playoff. I think it was just one of those days. And I don't care what anybody says, Jim. I think in game one, players are really excited because it's the first time they get to hit somebody else. It's the first time they get to play competition. You can't tell me that these kids are looking at these opponents and just like, yeah, we're really fired up to play FIU. There's a mental element to this as well. And I think that also plays a factor. If you had thrown in Auburn week two or West Virginia or somebody, I think it makes a little bit of a difference.
You make a good point, and let me clarify. I'm not, you know, Penn State does not deserve a pat on the back for the performance. But I think you also have to understand, you know, this happens with teams. I think week one, they were very good with the passing game. They couldn't run the ball. This time around, they ran the ball well. You know, they didn't pass the ball well. But I think James Franklin is trying different things. He's playing a lot of young people, trying to find out who they are. And I'll give you an example. Week one, James Franklin afterwards, he talked about trying to get everybody a touch. You know, Khalil Dinkins was in the game, the starting tight end, very late in the fourth quarter of game one because he hadn't had a catch yet. I'm not sure he had even had a target. They get him a ball. Catches it, boom, he's out of the game, rest of the game. So that was the mentality. We're trying to do that kind of thing. What happened, though, in this game, early on I was telling you about failing on third down. Luke Reynolds, who is he played a lot last year at tight end as a true freshman because Andrew Rappelier, who should have been, you know, number three tight end, had a season-ending injury early. So we got introduced to Luke Reynolds. He's going to be the next great tight end. Well, guess what? We sort of found that out in this game. When, as the game progressed, they got into the second half. Guess who they started going to on third down? Targeted nine times with seven completions, several of them, you know, third down. He broke tackles to get first downs. So it's like, okay. Now watch for Luke Reynolds the rest of the season as kind of that go-to guy. No, I'm not saying he's Tyler Warren, so just, you know, hold off on that. But he's going to be really good. And, you know, Khalil Dinkins will probably be the next Penn State NFL tight end. Luke Reynolds will probably be the next first-round NFL tight end. And, by the way, you're out in the Midwest. Did you see how our boy Tyler Warren did in his first NFL game?
Jim, do you see this flag behind me? I know it's a Pacers one, but it says Indy. I'm also a Colts fan. I was unable because I was traveling back from the game, so I had to listen to it. I love Matt Taylor, the play-by-play he does. Three catches on the first drive. He ends with 70 or 75, 73, something like that. 70-some yards on seven catches. They used him I don't know if it was in shotgun, but they used him as a running back at one point. I already love that kid. We had the Colts had not won a season opening game since 2013.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God. So I'm already talking Super Bowl, Jim. So talk about being on the ledge here. I'm fired up.
Well, I'll tell you what, I could have told you this before. You probably knew it though. You are going to love Tyler Warren.
Oh, I know. I already do.
And the only one he's going to love him more than you is going to be the quarterback in Indianapolis, because he's such a, you know, he has the large range type, you know, catch radius. He'll break tackles. He'll go up and get the ball, contested balls, not to mention the whole, you know, some fun using him out of a shotgun.
Well, I was just going to – I'll add one more thing really quick. And the thing that they kept saying on the radio is – now, I didn't see, so I don't know, but he caught a couple passes over the middle. Last year, the Colts could not – nothing down the middle. If you defended the numbers, you were good against the Colts because they couldn't find the middle of the field. And it sounds like with him, they've got a really good target that they feel comfortable with going in the middle of the field and picking up some yardage. So I'm very encouraged by Tyler Warren. Might be the second best draft pick in franchise history behind Peyton Manning.
Well, you are going to love him. All right. Dustin, we kind of diverted from the Big Ten there a little bit, but I think our listeners are Penn State fans. Do not mind ever, ever, ever talking about Tyler Warren. And even talking about the tight end room, there is such a legacy now with Penn State tight ends. And trust me, Dustin, there are more coming, okay? This is not, you know, an anomaly. They're going to be good at tight end for a while. All right. When we come back, Dustin, I'm going to ask you for at least your top five in the Big Ten. So are you ready for that?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, I promised we would get to your top five in the Big Ten, but before we get there, there were a couple games that we didn't hit on that I just want to get your quick response to it. I didn't see any of the game, but Michigan State beat BC. A nice win for Michigan State. It had to be an exciting game. 42-40, Aiden Childs with four touchdown passes.
Yeah, he's the wild card. And again, this was a game I didn't get to see at all either, but to me, Aiden Childs was one of those wild card quarterbacks coming into this season, because watching him last year, he was to me a guy who was a little bit erratic, but you could tell he had the arm talent. It was just, I think that was his first full year as a starting quarterback and kind of gelling with the team, and their offensive line wasn't particularly good. That was a good showing, and I know Boston College isn't like the cream of the crop of college football, but the fact that they were able to get that win, I think, gives them a big confidence booster. I'm not saying that Aiden Childs being good is going to make Michigan State a playoff contender or anything like that, but could they beat a team or two that maybe they're not supposed to? Could they get to eight wins this year? Maybe. I thought that game, I didn't have high expectations for Michigan State, but if Aiden Childs can play like that and do it consistently, he was a very inconsistent player last year. If he can do that consistently, then Michigan State's going to cause some problems for some teams.
Again, this is Jim's year of the quarterback.
Yeah, right.
And if you're an experienced veteran quarterback, boy, there's something to be said for that. The other game is, I think you and I both were kind of high on UCLA coming into this season based on how well they played at the end of last year. Another loss out of conference, these out of conference games that they should not be losing these games, Dustin.
And they're going to lose this weekend to New Mexico. I feel confident about that. I have no comment. Yes, we were dead wrong because I looked at what Deshaun Foster did last season and thought, oh, he was thrown into that in the spring. He had to get that team ready to go. They won 5 games. They were competitive in some other games. I'm interested to see what happens year 2, especially with a quarterback like Nico Iamalava. And I'm not doing that to make fun, by the way. I'm doing that so I can pronounce his name correctly. Jim, that may be top 3 dumbest decisions in the history of college football. And that's not hyperbolic. Like that's his decision to go from Tennessee to UCLA, end up taking less money, having no supporting cast around him. And now they're 0-2. I don't know if they're going to win a game.
Well, you know, once they hit Big Ten play, and I haven't looked at their schedule to see if there's any cupcakes in there. I mean, do they play Maryland? Do they play Purdue? You're 2-0 undefeated Boilermakers, by the way.
I mean, I think Purdue would beat them. The only game, so this is their schedule. They play New Mexico this week, which New Mexico went on the road and gave Michigan all it could handle. They play at Northwestern. So Northwestern's pretty bad. So that could, but they're going to have to travel across the country. And we saw what happened last year in those games. Then Penn State, at Michigan State, they do host Maryland, so maybe one there, at Indiana, Nebraska, at Ohio State, Washington, USC. I mean, 2 at the max they would win.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of wins on that schedule.
No.
That's sad. And I'll give one last note. I'm going to let you tell us about your Purdue team that you saw.
Oh, well, 34-17 against Southern Illinois. So, when you look at the scoreboard, not great. They gave up 2 early touchdowns. Southern Illinois was pretty impressive. Their quarterback, DJ Williams, I don't know if he's got any eligibility left, but there's going to be some FBS teams that are knocking on his door to go in the transfer portal. I think it was kind of the same as Penn State. The goal for Purdue, because they threw the ball so well last week against Ball State and – didn't run, they rushed for under 100 yards. Their goal was to run the ball, establish the ground game. So once they got a lead, they were content to just run the football. I think they probably could have scored 45 points in that game if they really wanted to air it out and do some things. But they were like, we need to establish the run. They ran it almost 60 times in that game. And so it wasn't an impressive scoreboard. But it's one of those things where when you were a program that was so bad a year ago, you got to take those baby steps. We saw that they can throw the ball in that win over Ball State. Now they wanted to establish the run. And I think kind of the way James Franklin is doing, you know, everything's in preparation for Oregon. Purdue plays USC this week. So I think they also want to give the Trojans a lot of different looks with what they may try to do offensively next weekend. So not overly impressive, but again, this is a team now that has doubled their win total from a season ago, Jim.
Hey.
2-0, 2 wins, and you double your win total.
You keep up that rate. Every year, double your win total. They'll be national champions within a couple years.
That's right. That's right.
The arrow's pointing up. All right, Dustin, as promised, I wanted to get your Big Ten top 5 because I think it's too early to talk about beyond top 5, and nobody cares. So.
Fair.
I want to hear your top 5. Let's go 1 through 5.
Okay. I don't know why I said this so confidently that I was excited to give you my top 5 because I don't know. because of the way they handled Oklahoma State, excuse me, I put Oregon number 1. I still think Penn State's number two, even though they had a little bit of a laxed effort there against FIU. Ohio State at number three. You could argue Ohio State two, Penn State three for me at this point, and I'm not gonna fight you on it. Number four is Illinois, because of their performance against Duke and starting off 2-0. I think that's a huge game, especially with a team like Indiana lurking around the corner. And then fifth, as I texted you, Jim, I don't know, Indiana, USC, and this could, maybe it's still Michigan. Maybe Oklahoma is going to be really good this season. I don't know. But to me, those are the three teams that are probably in the mix. I think maybe it'll be interesting to see. You could probably convince me to throw Nebraska in there because they got not because of their 68-0 win over Akron, or 66, whatever it was, but because they beat Cincinnati and then they turn around and put together an offensive performance that I don't think we've seen in probably 10, 12 years from that program. So I think there's a lot of different teams, but those are, I would put Indiana, USC, and Michigan. And then in the maybe in that like six area, I think I'd probably put Nebraska. So those are the four teams right now for me competing at number five, but it'll be interesting to see how it progresses because outside the top four, I really don't know right now.
Well, that's typical, and I think we talked about it even before the season. You know, it's like 1-3, you know, Penn State, Oregon, and Ohio State in some order, and I think you can put them in a hat and pick those three out and decide. I would probably put Ohio State number one of the three just because they've got a win.
The best win.
Texas. Easily the best win among the top three. And at some point, you got to give credit to people for what they do actually on the field, you know, who they beat. So that would make it Ohio State. Oregon, again, Oklahoma State is not good, but Oregon, you know, was more impressive. I think in that way, Oregon number two, Penn State number three. That's what – now, having said all of that, I've been saying since last season ended – to me, this Penn State-Oregon game is Penn State getting absolutely everything lined up perfect for them in that game. You know, and I've been saying Penn State's been prepping for Oregon for 8 months. Mm-hmm. Absolutely no one in the Lash building will admit that. They won't.
Right.
It's true, though. Okay? It's true. And it's a home game, night game, whiteout game. Oregon traveling the length of the country. So I think probably before the season said Illinois fourth among that big group. Now I declare it. Illinois is number four. I was impressed. I know Duke, some of the pain was self-inflicted, mm-hmm. but it was still at Duke. In fact, that was kind of my upset special for the week. I thought Duke would win that game because I just thought everybody was going too crazy for Illinois.
There were a lot of people. Well, this is your man crush on Manny Diaz playing, yes, you know, at work. No, but you're not alone. There were a lot of people that said Duke's going to be better than people think. The fact that Illinois is going to have to go on the road. There were a lot of people that were hesitant on Illinois in this game. I don't know what the spread was, but I think there were a lot. I think there was a lot of people who were picking either Duke to win this or at least cover the spread. But that was a convincing performance from Illinois. And again, I'm not ready to completely dismiss Michigan yet from that conversation. I don't know how good Oklahoma is. And I will say too, the one thing I will differentiate between your list and mine, if you wanted to go by best win, obviously Ohio State would belong number one. I kind of viewed it as, if those teams were playing right now, who do I think would win that game? And that's where I got to my top three at. Certainly that can change in a few weeks. And I think the number of impressive, you know, the strength of your wins is going to play more of a factor in that as we continue to go. But for me, the Ohio, obviously beating Texas is really impressive, but they were at home. It was Arch Manning's first game. There were a lot of different factors where I'm not quite ready to put Ohio State at number one just yet.
And again, like I said, those three teams, put them on neutral fields.
Yeah.
Who knows? By the way, Duke was a three-point underdog in that game. It was just 3 points.
Oh, wow. Which,
with home field. And I kind of hate myself for knowing that. and then, number five, boy, there's an argument for a lot of those teams. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Nebraska kind of as an add-on. I would put them in that group too. Just, I think they may have a special quarterback who now in his second year, it's a much different conversation.
Yeah. I mean, he, to me in that Cincinnati game, he was a, he put up some big numbers, but against the Bearcats, it seemed like he couldn't get off his main receiver in the sense of like, he was stuck on one guy. And if not, he was going to check down, which by the way, just complete the pass, extend the play. That's your job as a quarterback, but I wasn't impressed with his downfield. Now I know it was Akron coached by, I'm so sad for Joey Moorpoints. It's been quite a demise for him since he's left Penn State. But the fact that they were able to like throw in the ball all over the field, I think his completion rate is somewhere around 79%. I don't care who you're playing. That's really good. And the fact that they did it, one of those games was against a Power Four opponent in Cincinnati. I'm really impressed. Like I said, I don't know that we've seen that type of offensive output from Nebraska in 10, 12 years. And it makes me really excited for in a couple weeks when they play Michigan. We'll find out a lot about both those teams.
I just can't wait for a couple weeks when we get conference play. All right, that's it for quarter three. One more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. And, you know, as we close quarter number three, I said, Dustin, I can't wait for a couple weeks when we could get, you know, all those good games. We could get conference play. Between segments, you corrected me. We will get conference play this week in week three. Dustin, we do. Here's the two Big Ten conference games. We got Oregon at Northwestern and USC at Purdue. The two home teams are underdogs by a combined 49 points.
Yep. Not good.
I'm going to give you an opportunity here, okay, to defend your Boilermakers. USC coming in, they're, you know, that cross country or the long flight coming in. We all know how tough that was a year ago. Convince me that Purdue's going to at least cover the spread.
So it's going to be tough. But these are a couple things that I think are working in Purdue's favor for this game. And I know USC has scored 129 points in their first two games. I think they put up 70 in their opener and then scored 59 against Georgia Southern. There are two things that I think really help Purdue in this regard. Number one is, as you mentioned, the cross-country travel. USC went on the road and lost to Michigan, to Minnesota, and lost to Maryland in their three longest trips. And Maryland was – the other two were understandable because at least Michigan and Minnesota were bowl teams. I think they both ended the season with eight wins, solid teams. Maryland was not good. That was not a good team that they ended up losing to. So I think that that works in Purdue's favor. The other thing that works in Purdue's favor in this game is that offensive coordinator Josh Henson was at USC the last three seasons working for Lincoln Riley. So they are going to have some inside intel as to what the Trojans like to do offensively and what they like to do defensively. And when you can game plan, and the only reason I bring this up is because the last two seasons, Illinois has been a lot better football team than Purdue, but Ryan Walters was the head coach at Purdue, who was a defensive coordinator at Illinois. Purdue beat Illinois in 2023. They had Illinois finished with 10 wins. Purdue was 1-11. That game was decided in overtime on a missed two-point conversion by Purdue in order to. So I think that having knowledge of a team's playbook and their staff is incredibly beneficial. I still think USC is going to win that game, but I do think it's going to be really close. And you're going to say, hey, Purdue may have a squad this year. So that is my pitch to you on to why I think Purdue will actually be very competitive in that game with some chances to maybe to steal one.
And our listeners could say they heard it here first from Dustin. Now,
if it's 38-7, they didn't hear it from me.
Disavow any knowledge and support of the Boilermakers. We mentioned the other Oregon at Northwestern. I know that's the long trip from the West Coast. I don't care. I don't care. Don't think that's going to be.
Can I tell you what I'm interested in about that game?
Go ahead.
Do you remember 2 years ago at Media Days, Oregon brought that big duck to the Indianapolis, to the White River, and they set it up to like make their big introduction? Well, right now Northwestern's playing. Their stadium is up against a lake, Lake Michigan. Right. Yeah. I want Oregon to bring their duck. An inflatable duck just overlooking the stadium just to kind of troll Northwestern a little bit. I think that would be hilarious. That's the only thing that's interesting to me about that specific game.
I'll tell you what, it would be fun to watch a game at that temporary stadium that they have.
I've heard it's really nice. Yeah.
Beaver Stadium, they have the temporary stands up, and at casual glance, you can't really tell. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
These are the same people who put up the stands for the 17th hole at the Waste Management Golf Tournament.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. They know what they're doing with that. All right. Let's hit at least an interesting game. I'm going to be intrigued by it. I want to hear what you have to say. Wisconsin is at Alabama. If you remember, this is the return trip from last year when Alabama was at Wisconsin. I don't want you to look at – have you seen what the spread is for this game?
Oh, boy. We always play a game. My fiance and I have guessed the spread, and I tell her – or she guesses, and then I tell her. I saw it last night, but now I don't remember. I want to say it was like 16.5. Is it more than that?
Yes. It's
26.5?
20.5.
20.5. Okay.
And I don't know if that surprises me or not, because Alabama, after, their early season performance against Florida State, has Kellen DeBoer kind of lost that team? They really didn't seem that interested. They didn't seem motivated. Should we take much from that? But is Wisconsin the team that can take advantage of it, or is this a chance for Alabama to get fat?
I think it's a chance for Alabama to get fat. I mean, Wisconsin already lost their starting quarterback. Billy Edwards was injured in that week one win over Miami of Ohio. Now, Danny O'Neill played really well, 23-27 in that win over Middle Tennessee. But the fact that Wisconsin has to go on the road, especially in this game, this could be one of those games. I think it was like this last year. I'd have to go back and check, but it's probably one of those games where Alabama leads by like 10 or 14 at half. And then in the second half, it just starts pouring it on because they've got more talent, bigger bodies, and Wisconsin's just not going to be able to hang around.
And this is where Southeast Conference speed against a team like Wisconsin, we might actually see it. I wanted to ask you about a couple of the national games. There are a few. There aren't those big, top 10 matchups, but there's a couple games, and I'm going to throw a couple at you. You tell me which one you want to talk about. Georgia at Tennessee could be very interesting, but here's Florida after that loss is at LSU.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to play name the spread again. Did you know the spread for that game, or can I make you guess?
For which one? Florida LSU?
Yeah. And it's at LSU.
I'm going to guess. I feel like I want to guess high on this, but it's probably not. 8.5?
6.5. That surprised me, as well as LSU's been playing, as poorly as Florida's been playing. And, you know, if you give it the standard 3-point home field, you know, you're saying it's a 3.5-point game on a neutral field?
Yeah, I don't like – I mean, I'd hammer LSU on that one.
Same here. I'm also intrigued by Clemson at Georgia Tech. After Clemson really struggled against Troy – after losing to LSU, you know, speaking of LSU, I think Clemson at Georgia Tech, that's going to tell us a lot about Clemson.
Yeah, and I don't know how good Colorado is, but Georgia Tech went on the road and beat Colorado week one. And then they played Gardner-Webb this past week and demolished them as they should. But that's going to be a really interesting – I think Brett Key is a really good football coach. I'm intrigued by that game, too. You could be talking about Clemson, who we thought was going to be the premier team in the ACC. There's a real chance, Jim, they're 1-2 by the end of this weekend. They've not looked impressive to me.
I think so also, and I like Georgia Tech's quarterback. He's a gamer. Here's another intriguing game. How impressed are you with South Florida with two – wins against ranked teams, 24-7 against Boise State, 18-16 over Florida this weekend. They are at Miami. And, you know, Miami's a big favorite. It's 16.5 points. But aren't you a little curious to see what South Florida could do now against this is their third ranked team they faced already?
Yeah, I feel like this game is going to be go one of two ways. Either this is going to be one of those games where you watch and you go, Mario Cristobal is doing Mario Cristobal things again and letting USF hang around, or Miami's just going to pummel them from start to finish. And you all go, okay, USF, they had a good start, but they're really not that good.
Reality hits.
Yeah, I don't know. This might, to me, I know there's Tennessee, Georgia. I know there's Georgia Tech, Clemson. This to me though is the most intriguing game, just because I don't know what to expect. Like, if USF is the real deal, we could be talking about them being the group of five spot in the college football playoff.
Well, I can't imagine another group of five team getting a pair of victories that are this impressive.
Right. And they're USF to Miami. That's so it's on the road, but it's not a massive road trip. Right. Same thing with, you know, USF to Florida. I don't know what the actual number is in terms of the hours, but it's not like they're having to go across the country. Yeah. So we'll see.
I'm intrigued by that game. And probably the biggest game name-wise is Texas A&M at Notre Dame. Boy, Notre Dame can't afford to lose another game, Dustin.
No, they cannot. And we saw how they struggled with Miami's defense. Texas A&M, I don't know that Texas A&M's defense is as good, but they are aggressive and they will bring pressure. So Notre Dame is going to have to depend on their offensive line a lot in that game. They're going to have to keep CJ Carr upright. So now I've lost the name of it, darn it. But Cassius Howell has been a monster. He racked up 3 sacks in their last game. I think he's got 4 or 5 on the season. Texas A&M has some big dudes. I think Notre Dame can maybe hit on some big plays, but I think that's going to be another one where Notre Dame's going to have to try to match Texas A&M's physicality. And in that week one game against Miami, even though they had a shot to win it at the end, they really, for 45 minutes in that game, did not match Miami's physicality.
Yeah, Miami was the much better team, which, like I said, I know a lot of, they expanded playoffs. It de-emphasizes the regular season. I'm looking at this as almost a do-or-die game for Notre Dame.
Oh, absolutely. Because if they win, it's a big feather in the cap, and you kind of bounce back from that loss to Miami. And Texas A&M, this is a chance to start 3-0 with a signature win before you even dive into conference play. So this is big for both teams. And to your point, Notre Dame, if they can make it out of this portion of their schedule 2-1, it's not really that daunting of a schedule the rest of the way. I mean, at least as we would consider it.
I'm with you on that one. All right, Dustin, that is going to have to be it. Thank you, Dustin, so much. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.